Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. It can make a 15 to 20 year difference in how long you live based on where you live in San Antonio. A countywide assessment has found that zip codes make a big difference in an individual's outcome for health and lifespan. For many residents, there's a lack of access to nutritious food, preventable health care, opportunities to exercise. These are all contributing factors to life expectancy. And that gap is there between the northern and the southern areas of the city. In 2017, Healthy Bear Plan will attempt to tackle this issue, and you can view the 2017 Bear County Community Health Improvement Plan on our website at tpr.org. We're going to be talking about their findings and their strategies to try to find out how we can deal with that. The number to call in if you got a question or a comment is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments and tweet us at TPR Source. We're joined this afternoon with Elizabeth Letts. She is the executive director of the Health Collaborative. We're also joined by Martha Castilla. She's a local promotora. And Steve Blanchard is here. He's a sociology professor at Our Lady of the Lake University, board member and committee chair for the Health Collaborative. Mario Martinez, he's with Project Worth. He's a program manager for the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. And it's great to have you all here in the studio this afternoon. We have a lot to talk about. But I want to go first to Elizabeth Letts. If you could tell me more, since you're the executive director of the Health Collaborative, about the study. What are the findings? Because that's, you know, that's a big thing to drop on somebody, that if you live on the north side versus the south side, you could have 15, 20 years extra lifespan.
Yep, absolutely. So let me preface this by actually saying that the report where the findings were uncovered was actually the 2016 Community Health Needs Assessment that was done this last year. The Community Health Improvement Plan, or the Healthy Bear Plan, is the follow-up. It's sort of, we've identified what the issues are in our community. We look at this devastating data and look across the sector and talk to families about what is happening in the communities. And the 2017 Healthy Bear Plan is really, what are the actions, what are the strategies that we can put together in collaboration with a multi-stakeholder group across sectors to really try to address those challenging issues that we're seeing, not just in this report, but in years previous as well. This is the sixth needs assessment report that we do, and after each of the assessments, we do a health improvement plan, which is that strategic aim, and it's the third revision to this very specific issue area of healthy eating, active living, sexual health, mental health and well-being, safe communities. So these are ongoing issues, and these are issues that are affecting our community, not just in this generation, but potentially have impacts across multiple generations if we don't step in and form strategies and actions and partner with each other to be able to make some changes.
Mario Martinez, Project Worth and the Health Department. What are the leading factors that are causing this health life expectancy gap?
So we look at the social determinants of health, and those are the things where people live, work, and play. And so these are underlying things that happen in our community that expose us to higher health disparities in certain parts of our community. And this is important for folks to know, because the underlying preface, as Elizabeth was talking about with the Healthy Bear Plan, is to identify strategies but concentrate those strategies and actions looking at those root causes of what is happening in our community. So we look at, for example, streets and lights, which came up in the Safe Communities work group. If we want folks to be physically active in their neighborhoods, then we have to look at where people live, lighting. And so these were all taken into account in the different groups that worked in putting together the Healthy Bear Plan.
So streets and lights, that would mean then I would be able to go out at night and exercise, take that walk. Is that worth talking? Or does that lead to public safety? Is that a stress reliever? I mean, how big of a difference would that make?
It would make a huge difference in certain parts of our community where if individuals and our residents don't feel safe to go out with their children to walk around the block or go to the park, then they're sheltered in. They don't feel like they can really take advantage of maybe some of the resources that are available to them that maybe is across the street or around the block. And these multiple factors add to the health and well-being of individuals, their families, and eventually their communities.
Steve Blanchard, you're a sociologist, sociology professor at Our Lady of the Lake University, also the chair of the committee for the Health Collaborative. So I think maybe you're looking at this with two different lenses, but still predominantly with sociology. Maybe are there social factors that are different from one side of town to the other that impact the health life expectancy?
Yes. I think, zip codes are now considered in population health and community health studies to be the proxy for neighborhoods because so much health-related data is available at that geography. And when you look at, we created a series of maps. The executive director with the partner that we had, CNOW, was doing the extant data for the 2016 assessment, pointed out the difference in life expectancy. We thought it would be a good idea to map that at the zip code level for the whole community. And if you look at those maps, you'll see that in association with the life expectancy, the low life expectancy, there is also things like lack of health insurance, low educational level, factors that we might walkability in neighborhoods is low. So there are social factors in the context of those in those neighborhoods. I think if the idea, I think one of the things we learned in 2010, to go back a little ways, a salient thing was that most people at whatever level in the community have a pretty good idea of what strategies are necessary to improve their health. But there are barriers, and one of the barriers that's crucial is lighting in the streets and neighborhoods, like you were saying, where people would come home in the evenings and want to go out in the evenings and walk. Someone with diabetes, that's a good practice, a good strategy to improve health. Just getting out and walking around is good, and some of the neighborhoods, the sidewalks are not well built or not improved, so that if we can bring through this community health improvement plan the attention of the need for some further development in neighborhoods, even in the built environment of neighborhoods, that will enable people to get out to do the kinds of things they know they need to do to improve their health.
Our promotora here is Martha Castilla. Can you talk a little bit more? So you are active in the community. You are engaged. You're part of the community. You
Yes.
are the community. And so is this reflect what you see?
Yes. For example, in the past year, a lot of things have changed with the families. We now have to add not only to the stress of poverty and dealing with chronic illnesses, but there's the immigration issue. That issue about the streets and the lighting and all that, that's something that we've never understood because we've asked for help with that, and it never changes. Because once you cross, let's say 410 or 35, you come to this area where the homes are big and they're bright, the streets are pretty, and you go on that side, there's no sidewalks, they're broken. No one can deny the problem that exists. Just by seeing it, you can see it. Now add to that the immigration issue where now you have multiple families living in a small house. So, you know, you could relieve some of that stress by going to the park or something, but if it's dim, if there's dogs, then it's gonna be dangerous. There's no safety there.
When you say the immigration issue, so are you mean that there are people who are families who have one or two family members living with them who may not have have problems with their local status, and they're wondering what their future's like?
Well, for example, I work with a lot of families, and some of their husbands have been deported. I mean, and these families have been around forever. You wouldn't think that they have problems with their immigration. So then those the kids that are left behind and the mom move in with another family member.
Right.
So if you have a big house, it's wonderful. Everybody can take a floor or an area of the house. But if it's a small house to begin with, can you imagine the stress of living like that? And then if you don't have the breadwinner, then you deal with more poverty. And then you have diabetes, forget it. You either buy the medication or buy the food. And it's very... we've tried programs where we bring in healthy cooking, healthy choices, and all that. But even if we give them a sample, that's only going to be for tonight. So for tomorrow, they think twice about buying fresh fruits and vegetables and all that. That's not going to last a while. So they'd rather buy the packaged stuff or the cheap stuff. And so I think that it's time that we stop blaming the people and start looking at the environment and sure. all those that contribute to all those problems.
The stress. I mean, stress is something that just knocks years off your life. So Elizabeth Lutz, over your executive director of the Health Collaborative, mm-hmm. talk about what stress does to an individual.
I think we're seeing a lot of, as Martha was explaining, there's stress levels at very different degrees in all areas of the neighborhood. And I think everyone experiences a level of stress in their specific situations to different extents. But it is also considered a root cause and has a lot of triggers to other things that might be overwhelming families. And there's very specific strategies around the mental health and behavioral well-being of the community. A lot of the topics that Martha was mentioning are, you know, topics that are constantly discussed by these partners and these stakeholders that are living and working with these families day in and day out. But overwhelmingly, the mental health and well-being, emotional well-being of families is a tremendous root cause. And if not addressed or not supported and not being provided some of these resources, as Dr. Blanchard was mentioning, it's simple as providing them a safe space for them to be able to play or to take their kids out. Those become, you know, they snowball into other things. And these are not things that we say, you know, because Dr. Blanchard is a researcher, or Mario's with the program, or Marta's with the families working day in, day out. These are lived experiences, the families coming forth and saying, you know, you can give me a clinic, you can try to give me access to health care, but if my poverty and my living situation and my built environment does not support a healthy lifestyle, there's nothing, you're wasting money. We are wasting money if we're not providing those basic needs to families. And stressors in mental health and well-being are immediate root causes to those experiences.
So Steve Blanchard, people have stress. There's nothing we can do about what's happening in the country, and it causes people stress. But can we teach people better stress coping mechanisms? Frequently when people are under stress, they make bad decisions. They go for things that are self-soothing, which may be may help you feel better temporarily, but not good for you in the long term. That's just smoking, drinking, doing other things. So should we be saying other ways to deal with stress?
Yeah, I don't know that there are programs like that, but there ought to be programs like that. I think one of the things that happens is in a stressful situation or in stressful neighborhoods, the stress affects the autoimmune system. And the autoimmune system, when it is impaired, makes one more susceptible to infectious disease and even chronic disease. So I don't know that there are neighborhood-wide kinds of programs. Maybe that's something that the mental health initiative that the collaborative is working on. Maybe that's something that would take resources into neighborhoods to talk about how to alleviate some of the stress that individuals feel in the neighborhoods where they reside.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Do you want to talk with that, Mario Martinez?
Yes, I'll add to that. In our program at Project Worth, it's through the City of San Antonio Metro Health Department. When we do community outreach and education, we have materials coping with stress. And one specifically is a topic on parents and dealing with stress. And we easily go through those materials when we go out to schools.
I mean, you exhaust your supply.
Exactly. Because folks need and want that information. And so they're looking for sources of where they can access individuals or programs or services to help them to deal with the multiple levels of stress that they're dealing with.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We're going to continue talking about the health inequity in San Antonio, the lifespan differences between the North and the South, a lot of the challenges that we have in many of our neighborhoods on the south side of San Antonio, why that is, what can be done to alleviate that. We have some strategies that are being rolled out. If you have questions, we want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. Have you seen this in your own family? Give us a call. Tell us these stories. The number is 210-614-8980. This makes a big difference. This is how people live. Give us a call. The source continues after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. A report released by the Bexar County Health Collaborative has shown that there is a 20-year gap in life expectancy for people living in San Antonio area neighborhoods. The Community Health Needs Assessment releases every 3 years, and in the 2016 report, they were able to show that the near east side and the near west side populations have life expectancies of 70 to 74. 4 years, and meanwhile, life expectancy on the far northwest and far northeast Bexar County is up to 90 to 94 years. That is a big difference, and people are losing out on their golden years. And why is that? And what's being done about that? We're finding out that there are conditions that are challenging in on the south side, east side of San Antonio. Stress drivers helping people. They don't able to access healthy menus and also not access to health care. Give us a call with your observations. We'd love to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Joseph has called in. And Joseph, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you, sir. I was wanting to tell you, there's a clinic run by Methodist Healthcare Ministries. They have two of them. One of them is on the east side. I don't know exactly where it's at, but there's another one on the south side. And it's the south side is called the Wesley. And they provide free health care and free stress classes. But you have to qualify for them. And it's a great place. They also provide daycare for when you're for a parent having to go to an appointment.
Okay.
And I don't know if your listeners have ever heard of that clinic, those clinics before.
All right, Joseph, thank you for the call. We appreciate that. So Elizabeth Lutz, the executive director of the Health Collaborative. I mean, there's some help available. The question is it enough?
Right. So there's definitely valuable partners that are doing some really meaningful work, whether it's doing outreach, though, as Mario's described in his project, or whether there's actually clinics that are providing some of these services. I think the key driver there, as the caller mentioned, is do you qualify? And I think a lot of our families fall in this gap with whether you don't qualify because maybe you make a dollar too much or a dollar too little. And the other issues that have come out of root causes has also been the availability of those services at the times that the families need them. So we're working with multiple stakeholders to identify where maybe there's some small changes that could be made within their systems, within their programming to ensure that these services continue to be available, maybe expanded, but also to rethink the usual customer service hours, if you will, of the programs. I think it's great. Methodist Healthcare Ministries is a leader in that forefront. They're on our leadership of the board, have always been a big supporter of community health here. And I think they're doing some innovative ideas. Like Marta, they also have a community health worker program that goes out into the neighborhoods and provides those services. How can we replicate some of those models that are really working well for families into not just one area of the community, but really expand that throughout all those areas that we see those hot spots in?
So Marta Castilla, the local promotora, you work here in San Antonio and you work closely with families in these neighborhoods. What are you seeing is the major challenge, the biggest challenge to life, to make people have healthy, not have the ultimate healthy lifestyle? What's the problem?
I think it's affordability, whether it's of the care or the food, the diet, because everything comes back to diet. And they mentioned the clinic, but I also want to remind people that there's community centers like the Madonna Center. That's where I develop a program for the seniors where our focus is body, mind, and spirit to strengthen that. And that's when you get the maximum health. And so when we do the body, we do Tai Chi, we do different things. You have to excite them and expose them to something different. And that's when I figured that even if we showed them how to cook and gave them a sample, a bag of, to go do this at home, then, it's still not affordable for the next day or the next day. And I think that's, and they're very limited. Even if they get food stamps, they only get like $11 a month.
So when I have this statistic that the life expectancy for the far northwest and southeast Bexar County is 90 to 94 years old, and can you imagine that would be the life expectancy for your community?
No, most of the men do hard work. And I remember they told me
that at the age of 50, the men make the best salaries. You know, they should be making good money, and that's the top of their career and all that. And I said, great, so let me look for those men. But what happens is they're either disabled or they're dead. They don't get to be that age. In our center, we have the majority are women. We have very few men that get to be that age or get to, you know, come out. Even if they get to be that age, they're disabled. So they really don't want to leave their homes.
Mario Martinez at Project Worth. When you look at the breakdown of the demographics, what do you see? I mean, can we see, like, this is the problem right here?
Yes. So the data is definitely, you know, a central to our discussion today and even with the Healthy Bear Plan. And just going back to what Martha was saying, when we have communities where the breadwinner, you know, is dealing with disabilities or dying at an early age, we're dropping families back into a cycle of poverty. And this is part of the discussion with the plan, is to bring stakeholders together to look again at the social determinants of health, the root causes in these neighborhoods and communities, to then explore how do we work within systems and processes to make changes. And this goes up even to policy level decisions that we make in government as well.
It seems like, you know, this factor that people in these neighborhoods realize they're not going to live past 70 years old, may not even make it to pass. And so you wonder, like, well, no wonder people are teen pregnancy and things, because life is shorter. They got to pack more. This has repercussions up and down all sorts of decisions that people have to make. And Martha Castillo, you're nodding your head. Do you think that factors into how people decide they're going to live their lives?
Yes, I think so. I think the young ones are quick to start living their life and start to look for another source of if the dad's no longer around. So then they start to build their own families. But now coming, whether it's because they don't have good jobs or immigration or whatever reason, then we have all the families living together. And there's many families that live like that.
Okay. Another caller. This is Lupe. Lupe, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have two things I'd like to talk about. One is, on the South Side, we have really very poor access to good health care. There are very few specialist doctors on the South Side. And we have only one, and it is a horrible, horrible hospital. We have only one hospital here, a full hospital. I would never recommend it to anyone. We've used it several times. Doctors on the South Side, and I've also, family members have seen doctors on the North Side. Doctors on the South Side tend to not make appointments or give several people the same appointment slot. I don't care what their excuse is. They're still making money. And people are expected to wait hours after their appointment time to actually see the doctor.
All right, Lupe, thank you for the call. Access to health care, how important is that, Steve Blanchard?
It's absolutely important. I think one of the most critical factor, in a way, in the occurrence of low life expectancy in those zip codes and neighborhoods is the lack of health insurance, and which means lack of opportunity or access to health care. People don't have that in their repertoire of choices to make.
But as Lupe was talking about, if you make an appointment for a doctor, it's not going to be for that hour. It's going to be basically for the entire day. If you're working an hourly kind of job,
you're going to lose wage. You could lose wage. If you are an hourly wage earner and you have to go in to see a doc and you don't see the doctor for 3 or 4 hours, you're not working.
So that means you're going to miss out on preventive medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that is also a big factor in shortening life, Elizabeth Lutz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so another factor to consider is the affordability of healthcare, the access to healthcare. But some of the things that we've learned from families and stories that we've heard is just getting to the doctor, the transportation issues, right? everyone assumes that you have a vehicle, that you have a dependable way of being able to get there. And so as the caller mentioned, you might have multiple appointments that you have to go to on a certain day. That means time out of work. But then we take for granted us that can go to a meeting or go to a doctor's appointment and leave 15 minutes before that appointment happens. For many of the families that are living in poverty and living in these situations, there are bus rides away from their doctor's appointments. So we can't assume that people will get there on time, number one, because they're depending on something else to be able to get them there. And then they're quickly rushed through their health care because they have to meet the next patient. And so absolutely, I can agree with the caller that called in and said, you know, you do. There are many families, whether they're disabled or don't have transportation, they have to plan out their full day. On top of that, if they miss their appointments, then their doctors or physicians or offices are calling them uncompliant or noncompliant, or we're going to now charge you because you didn't come. And so there's added fees and costs. So the healthcare cost to them, they really have to rethink how they do that, when they do that, the affordability and the access, but also the management of their household in order for them to be able to get there.
And Martha Castilla, is that what people tell you? I can't go to the doctor. I love to go to the doctor. I just can't.
Yeah, because they can't afford to pay, or if, like, for example, that is a big way to stop people from going, when they charge you when you don't make it on time, or if you're late, they tell them, sorry, you weren't here, and then they charge you. And but most of them don't have a place to go. They've tried the clinics, but they're far from the west side. To go to the Wesley Clinic, it's far.
Takes an entire day.
Multiple buses,
and just the riding the bus in itself. Mm-hmm. If you're not feeling good, that's the last place you want to be.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Another break. We got a lot of calls here. We're going to get them on the air when we come back from this break. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. We're talking about the different health outcomes that we have in San Antonio. We know that if you live on the north side, this is what the numbers tell us, your lifespan is going to be 20 years longer than if you live on the south side. We're looking at some of the reasons why that is. It's poverty, it's stress, it's lack of access to healthy food, lack of health care. What can we do? And we're going to try and get some solutions on the table here. How can we improve these outcomes? The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Where you live is going to decide how long you live. There are zip codes in the city where residents have poor health outcomes, few resources. That leads to shortened lifespan. What is the roadmap to bridge the life expectancy gap between the north and south side in San Antonio? Call in with your question or comment, 210-614-8980. Junior is on the line. Junior, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, David. Thanks for taking my call. So I've been working, doing subcontracting for about 25 years. I learned with my dad a few years ago. You know, my dad did it his whole life. A few years ago, he passed away, and we couldn't afford to keep him, you know, we couldn't afford the treatments. Now, I live off of Rigsby on the south side, but all the work I do, a lot of it's in Almouth Park, or up on the north side, you know, 281, 1604 area. And I go up there, you know, I wake up at 7 a.m., I eat a breakfast taco maybe. I get over there, and I work till maybe 5, 6, 7 o'clock at night. And I see the things that they're eating in their house, you know. And in our culture, like, we just don't have access to those things on the south side, you know, like on the HEB down there, like, we can't get that stuff. All I have time to do is, like, maybe go to the corner store. And if I get sick, you know, I have to kind of work through the pain, because if I call in sick, then I'm not going to get called back, you know?
You'll lose your spot. All right, Junior, thank you so much for that. I think that was a snapshot of reality. Mario Martinez, program manager for the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District program, WORTH. What is Junior, you know, what is he a unique individual?
No, we see multiple stories very similar to the caller, and these are the conversations that we're hearing. We're in the community, and the community is telling us about the stressors and the challenges and the barriers that we just mentioned earlier in the show that are in the way of healthy neighborhoods. And I'll talk a little bit about the city of San Antonio has looked at these issues through a health equity lens and looking at where we can focus dollars for built environment and infrastructure that is part of solutions for these issues.
But you know, so we talked earlier about trying to do some stress strategies for individuals, but when someone like Junior calls up and you say, it's going to be ridiculous, you say, well, Junior, have you tried yoga? You know, he's living a life where he is on the job 24/7, and any time that he doesn't get a second bounce if he hits the ground, he's really doing it. And so as a promotora, you're out on the streets talking to people in the neighborhood. What do you tell them, Martha Castilla?
Well, first of all, the thing we do is try to connect them to resources. But I want to stress that the stress becomes anxiety, the anxiety becomes depression. And sadly enough, they've all accepted the situation. So you have a lot of people walking around like zombies, like, okay, we can't access that, we'll work this. But when he mentioned that he inherited that from his dad, there's a lot that do that. You know, they continue the dad's business. And younger, they're getting to start running those
and
businesses.
His father died young, looks like.
Yeah.
And he's on that same path.
Yeah, and the thing is that when they have accidents, I've seen that they cut their arms with the
or fingers. Saws, you look at these guys, and they're missing parts of their fingers all the time.
And sometimes the worker doesn't want to go because he doesn't want to lose the day, and the owner or the contractor says you have to because you know you're going to get worse. So it's a lot that you have to come to the point where no, I don't take care of me because I want to work.
Right, and then there's no workman's comp or anything like that for these guys. That's another issue. Jake has called in. Jake, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Outside of the health issues, another obvious issue we have in the west side and also the south and east side, we have slightly more dramatic gang problems than they do on the north side. One of your panelists brought up the... one of your panelists brought up the some of the household issues, you know, lack of parent or income and things like that, and people get desperate, and you know, they turn to dealing anything like that, and we have significantly more gang-related deaths than I've actually heard of in the north side. We have people killing each other for parking spaces. What do you think there is we could do to possibly curb that situation?
So Steve Blanchard, thank you for the call, Jake. Steve Blanchard, sociology professor at Our Lady of the Lake University. When you take a look at people who have died from homicide in San Antonio, is there a north side, south side divide?
No, actually, it's random. It's not associated with any particular one place in terms of homicide.
Okay, so, but there's a feeling that you're living in an area where you're stronger prone to violence, and does that make a difference?
So, can I answer that for a second? So,
all right, Elizabeth Litz.
So, in the Safe Communities work group, that was crime data was actually something that was brought forth with the partners, and we really wanted to investigate or look at the data that showed those trends. Did they show the trends? And as Dr. Blanchard mentioned, it was interesting to see the data that we have police department, retired police officer actually in the work group talking about how the data sets are set up. And if you're looking at crime data, break-ins or burglaries, they're actually happening in north side or in more affluent areas or even in HEB parking lots or open spaces because that's where car theft or burglaries happen. If you look at domestic violence data, you might see some areas that are hotspots, but it is pretty much throughout the community. So for us, in looking at strategies about how community safety is derived, it really needed to go back to talking to communities and families about what they're seeing. Do you report crime? Do you not report crime? Some communities don't report crime because of the issue of threat. They don't want to become victims of the crime if they do that. So I think that's a little bit, it's when we have to look at the data for what it is, but also go back to the community and really learn from them as to what's happening.
Okay, another caller, Arlene. Arlene, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to point out, like Junior had mentioned earlier, that I live in 78207, one of the poorest zip codes I think we had mentioned from a previous episode. And I, every week I'm driving, you know, 20 minutes outside of where I live to go to where I need to get my healthy food, Central Market, Whole Foods, because there's nothing available where I'm at. I'm lucky in the fact that I do have a car. I'm able-bodied. I'm able to do that. But as someone who goes into homes in 782-30248 and also 782-07237, I see the disparity, and a lot of the times it's very difficult for people in those poorer neighborhoods to just get anywhere. They're depending on other relatives, while people on the north side, you know, have their own drivers or relatives who can take time off to take them where they need to go.
Arlene, thank you for the call. Appreciate that. So, Elizabeth Lutz, you're the executive director of the Health Collaborative. What are the strategies? How are we going to make changes?
Right. So, in the report, we planned out. We started with what we wanted the goal to be first, and then we worked our way backward. So, in the report, we have a number of different strategies under each of the five areas, and then a number of different actions. So, an example with mental health or behavioral health would be maybe increasing opportunities for programs like mental health or stress relievers, look at different programs that are actually working and working well. Or, as Martha mentioned on the side, you invent something that with the community that will actually work for them, because they can be your best teachers at that point. With Safe Communities, it was about addressing or raising awareness more about the adverse child experience that might happen, early trauma and what that does to families, the root cause of poverty and how that plays into that and what can we do about it. There's policy recommendations on the plan. But all of these actions will require two things. They will require community will, and they will require political will.
But the first thing is to recognize that it doesn't have to be this way.
It doesn't have to be that way. Exactly. And raising the voice of families and having them tell their stories, as you had callers tell you today, those are impactful. And policyholders and council people and governing bodies are going to listen to their constituents. They have to see, and they have to put those in front of them. And when we make that conversation, when we elevate their voice, we're going to start seeing some real changes. We have to, because the status, the norm, is no longer going to be okay for our families.
And Mario Martinez at the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, how is this going to be coming out of that department?
Well, various levels at Metro Health. For one, education, working in the communities. In fact, we have a Healthy Neighborhoods program that are currently working in 11 neighborhoods. And those folks are, you know, either living or they do most of the work in those neighborhoods to really work with the community from the inside to, like Martha was speaking earlier about, is identifying those issues and root causes, but having those communities also come up with the strategies that are realistic and doable for them. And these neighborhoods are, again, in those communities or zip codes that we know by the data have the higher health disparities. So we want to then look at those kinds of models and replicate those across different neighborhoods to make sure that we're leveraging stakeholders, agencies, institutions, but also a big voice when it comes to residents who live in those neighborhoods.
And Martha Castillo, before we leave, what are your hopes?
My hopes is that first, they include the community, the people, because they have a lot of assets themselves, and they're the ones living there, and they're the ones that are going to participate. So we can't develop anything without checking with them, so that they need to be included.
Absolutely.
And when you do that, people really they like to be respected and heard, and then they really get into it because everybody wants to live in a healthy community.
Absolutely. And also want to thank Steve Blanchard. We're out of time, but thank you for coming with us. He's a sociology professor at Lady Lake University, committee chair for the Health Collaborative. Elizabeth Lutz is here, executive director of the Health Collaborative. Martha Castilla, she's our star local promotora. And Martha and Mario Martinez with the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.